I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. It is time now for our Africa update. Zimbabwe went from being one of the agricultural jewels of Africa to a country that had to import food for its people. Political violence racked the land, but this week, Zimbabwe's longstanding political rivals signed a landmark power-sharing deal. Plus, in South Africa, courts dismissed corruption charges against the leader of the ruling political party. Joining me now with details is Roxanne Lawson. She's director of Africa policy for Trans-Africa Forum. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, Farah.
So let's talk a little bit about Zimbabwe. We've been following this story. And after 7 weeks of talks, the president, Robert Mugabe, has agreed to share power with two different opposition leaders. He's going to be head of state, preside over cabinet meetings. Morgan Tsvangirai, who has led the largest part of the movement for democratic change, will be prime minister and chair of something called the Council of Ministers. And Arthur Mutambara, part of a faction of the movement for democratic change, is the deputy prime minister. So this is so complicated. We actually have on our website, nprnewsandnotes.org, a kind of flowchart of power. But what does this really mean? What are we really talking about?
I think we're talking about, hopefully, a real political change in Zimbabwe. What it may be, actually, is just more of the same. I think what we're seeing is that the power-sharing agreement actually did a really good job of addressing three issues, but did very little at all to address some of the deeper systemic issues in Zimbabwe. So, for example, looking at economic issues at land, redistribution and a land audit, and selection of parliament, very, very detailed moves forward. But when you look at things like reconciliation for Zimbabweans, the ability for NGOs to operate safely within the country, political activity, and the basic freedom of political activity and engagement and respect for the rule of law, those things are much vaguer. And given Zimbabwe's history with kind of unities, governments of national unity, we have a lot of concern moving forward. Only a couple of years ago, shortly in Zimbabwe's history, there was a government of national unity with Joshua Nkomo, who at that point was part of ZAPU, the other big party in Zimbabwe for most of the revolutionary period. And that government actually did not function at all. ZANU, or at that point ZANU-PF, basically froze out all of the political will of Joshua Nkomo and his supporters. And so I think that for many people, we're very, very worried moving forward.
So not a good track record thus far. Well, let's listen to a little bit of the two key players in this. Here's how Morgan Tsvangirai explained his decision.
I have signed this agreement because I believe it represents the best opportunity for us to build a peaceful, prosperous, democratic Zimbabwe. I have signed this agreement because my belief in Zimbabwe and its peoples runs deeper than the scars I bear from the struggle. I have signed this agreement because my hope for the future is stronger than the grief I feel for the needless suffering of the past years.
But President Mugabe blames Zimbabwe's problems on the former colonial power.
The problem we have had is a problem that has been created by a former colonial power wanting to continue to interfere in our domestic affairs and wanting to continue to have a share of our natural resources. Zimbabwe's land belongs to Zimbabweans.
When you hear these two men who went head to head over whether or not there was political violence against their supporters, whether or not there was a foreign influence that the British were trying to manipulate the movement for democratic change, do you think that these two guys can sit down every morning and have some tea and toast and govern the country together? Or what is it going to take to bring that together?
I think absolutely not. There are, for lots of really good reasons, real political and personal hesitancy and lack of trust between the two of them. And so that's one of the largest concerns, that how are they actually going to be able to govern together, when up until right before the beginning of these negotiations and the negotiations that preceded them that ended quite happily, they were unable to sit in a room together. I think that, you know, when you think about the way in which government functions, I think that's one of the reasons why the government is so multi-layered, why there are so many people involved. which may be a really good move forward. I mean, it may actually help them work together and actually have some kind of real government of unity, but probably will just be a lot of loggerheads and juggernauts around really simple issues and really complex issues. I can't, for example, see how something as simple as the appointment of judges, which right now Robert Mugabe has the ability to put forth judges' names and Morgan Tsvangirai has the ability to support or pull away his support for them moving forward. Something as simple as that, how that process actually will not function in this government. I think also one of the really important things is that with this new pact that has been signed and agreed upon by Robert Mugabe, Morgan Tsvangirai, and Arthur Motsvara, that the people of Zimbabwe are actually grossly absent from that, even in the review mechanism, which is part of the agreement, the review mechanism that will happen to make sure they actually are governing the way they're supposed to be governing. There's no real role for either Zimbabwean civil society or the people of Zimbabwe to be involved. I think that's actually a really tricky place to be, because we know that SADC nations and their governments will be involved. And we know also that the United States government and Great Britain will be involved.
Well, Roxanne, I have to move on to one last topic very briefly. Thabo Mbeki, the president of South Africa, helped broker this deal in Zimbabwe. But back at home, he's facing pressure to resign. There's some problems around whether or not he used his influence to prosecute his rival, Jacob Zuma. On Friday, a high court dismissed corruption charges against Zuma.
It is declared that the decision taken by the National Prosecuting Authority during or about 28 December 2007 to prosecute the applicant, a copy of which is annexed to the applicant's founding affidavit as Annexure A thereto, is invalid and is set aside.
Just give us a quick taste, with South Africa essentially anchoring the region. Quick taste, what's going on there? Could it destabilize the politics of South Africa?
It may destabilize the politics of South Africa. I mean, what we're seeing right now is actually the split that exists within the ANC, personified in Thabo Mbeki and Jacob Zuma. ANC is two very different political parties within one. One is a revolutionary party, which is, you know, Jacob Zuma, kind of old school and very much a populist party of the people, but also a party with some, I think, regressive policies around things like homosexuality. On the other hand, you have the ANC of Thabo Mbeki, which is a neoliberal ANC that supports really the interests of the West, that actually seeks to be the economic powerhouse of not just the region, but all of Africa, in the bottle and vein of the way in which the United States and other powers in the global North operate.
Right.
And that those two things are at tension.
All right. Well, Roxanne, we're going to have to pick this up later. We'll take a look at Thabo Mbeki. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Roxanne Lawson is Director of Africa Policy for Trans-Africa Forum. She was at our headquarters in Washington.